Welcome to the Startup Dentist Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Trutter. After over 800 plus successful dental startups, I'm here to share everything I know about starting a profitable and purposeful dental practice with you.
Welcome back to the Startup Dentist Podcast. Super great to be back here. It's been a little bit of time. I got a lot to unpack here today. If you are an associate dentist thinking about that leap into practice ownership, and you're thinking about like, okay, what happens when I leave my associate position? What do I do? I'm leaving maybe the golden parachute. Then check out one of my most recent episodes where I talk with Dr. Carly Sells. She is an ideal practices client that went through the journey, that's created something special in her community. She took the leap, and you're going to hear firsthand about like that mental part of that transition from, oh my gosh, I'm leaving something that is proven, and I'm building something for my own, and really that journey together. So definitely check out that episode. Today, we're going to dive into the common pitfalls of acquisitions. And I've been in the industry for over 20 years. And trust me, I do a lot of startups, and I've worked with a ton of clients that over the years that have bought practices. And there's a lot of things that you need to go into. And in reality, we need to almost like position acquisition similar to a startup, because there's a lot of things you need to look into. And it's not just about, I'll say this, it's not about just simply the practice or the transaction. So I'm going to help you some of the common pitfalls. There's a number of them to go through, but I want to help make sure that you're prepared, what you need to do so that you're not become the victim to buying the wrong practice. So grab your notepad and let's make this dream practice of yours a living and breathing reality. All right, folks, acquisitions. There's a lot to unpack here, so I've got a lot of things to jump into. Over the years, the reason why we've decided over the last few years to jump into more acquisitions is really out of demand. A lot of doctors have approached us and said, I don't know what to do. And here's the thing. I was watching The Matrix literally last night, and there's that part, you know, obviously there's the blue pill, there's a red pill. Sorry, I'm dating myself here, folks, but I love The Matrix. It's one of those movies that's like up there with like Shawshank for me, Shawshank Redemption, or even Goodfellas. If it's on, I'm going to watch it. I'm just sucked into it, like all The Matrix. I can watch every single movie of those, every single version of that, episode, you know, one, two, or three. But there's a part where they need like the guys in the ship can like input like the training, almost like the expertise on a certain, and there was a part, I can't remember the woman, I should know this, but the woman that plays like the main part, that's Neo's wife, girlfriend, significant other, and like, hey, I need a training manual for like a helicopter. And they're like, all right, cool. And he goes, hits a bunch of buttons, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, cool. I know how to fly an airplane or a helicopter, a military helicopter. You don't buy a practice on Friday, and then over the weekend, The Matrix punches a bunch of buttons and goes, you know now how to run a practice. Because most of you don't. The vast majority of you have never been exposed in your associate positions on things like numbers, hiring strategies, development of protocols and systems, how to put through insurance claims, and all these things. Like the business side, many of you have probably never been exposed to anything because, well, I work with a lot of dentists on a daily basis, and the common theme is, yeah, I don't have any experience in those elements. So I think it's important that you have a team, that you approach an acquisition with not just looking at the transaction itself, but really like, what is the right thing for me? Is this the right practice for my vision? Excuse me. More importantly, that you actually have a transition strategy that's not just about like having the practice, excuse me, ownership on Friday and then turn around Monday and not know what to do. Because that's what's happening. A lot of you are going to like, okay, I bought the practice. I should know by Monday how to run this practice. No. But what I want to do is help protect you from some of the biggest pitfalls that I've seen out there when it comes to practice acquisition so that you're better prepared, that you buy the right practice, that you're confident in the transaction, and there's actually a strategy for growth. So here we go. One of the common pitfalls I always see with acquisitions is you overpay for the practice. Yep, there we go. The transaction itself. But why this happens is not so much like a $25,000 swinger here or there. It's more importantly that you're relying upon somebody else's data for the valuation and the value of the practice as opposed to getting something independent. If you're relying on the broker, by the way, the broker is paid by the seller anywhere between 7 and 10% of the sales price to sell that practice at the highest point. They want to push that transaction forward. So don't just take their valuation or their cash flow, get your own. Don't get caught up in the excitement or fear of like, I got to do this thing, or the fear of missing out, especially if you're a first time practice owner, where it's like, I'm excited to do this without like having the due diligence done from a financial perspective so that you're not just buying something you're unaware of what's there. Don't just look at the top line revenue. You need to look at the practice profit and a cash flow. So many times on a lot of the Facebook groups, I see doctors post like general information about our practice. And the question is, what do you guys think? And it's like, here's what it produces, how many operatories it are. And it's like, yeah, that's okay. What kind of profit does it have? What are you actually going to take home? Does this actually make sense financially for you to do it? Some practices could be overvalued to a point where you're unaware and you step in day one. It's like, oh, I thought I had cash flow. I just have debt. So make sure that you have really understand the profit of the practice. Get an independent valuation. Now, I'm going to use the word valuation in bunny air quotes if you can see me, but if you can't, you hear me. I'm doing my bunny air quotes. You don't really need a formal valuation. There are people out there with I don't know if it's a degree, but it's more like a distinction, if you will, called a CVA, which is Certified Valuation Analyst. It's a thing. Most of the greatest, some of the best accounting firms and accountants out there in the dental industry and people that I've been worked with actually would say to me, you don't need a formal valuation. What you need is a cash flow analysis to say, if the practice purchase price is X, does that make sense from a cash flow perspective in this? Does it land within a range of values is the best way that it's been explained to me. And that's why I look at it. It's like if the practice purchase price is, you know, $900,000, does $900,000 make sense from a cash flow perspective in this range? Is it worth more like $850,000 or is there some other discounts and write-offs that can be in there that can actually give you the ability to negotiate the price? $25,000 to $50,000 here and there isn't going to be a big swing. So I wouldn't like, it's kind of like buying the home and saying, I want a discount on the home because I don't like the color of the mailbox. So don't walk from a practice over $25,000 or even $50,000 in a lot of cases, unless it's like a low value practice. But, you know, those good doctor to doctor transactions, that's not going to swing things from a monthly perspective. So how do you need to avoid this? Independent cash flow analysis. Understand what the doctor's earnings were, what the actual doctor is pulling out from a cash flow and not just collections, but actually profit into your pocket, and maybe even benchmark it against, you know, some other practices if you have information that's out there. So don't overpay for the practice. Hey there, Startup Dentist Podcast listeners. It's Stephen Trutter here, taking a quick break from today's episode to share something special with you. If you're dreaming of owning your own dental practice, then you need to get your hands on our Startup Dentist book. This isn't just any book. It's a 200-plus page comprehensive guide that covers everything you need to know to start a successful dental practice. From picking the perfect location to designing a patient-friendly office to building a marketing plan that draws in your ideal patients, we've got you covered. This book is packed with insider tips and real-world strategies. Dovetailing into that is not understanding a full understanding of the financials. You're clinicians, not accountants. There could be adjusted numbers that could obscure the true costs, that can normalize income, and there could be spouses or significant others, people like that, they're being paid through the practice. There could be a lot of high collection to production ratio. It can mask some write-offs, unreported staff expenses, and big fluctuations year to year. I like to call this the free agency doctor. And maybe I've said this before. I don't see it as much, but I used to see it quite a bit, especially with like professional sports players. Especially I saw it a lot more in like baseball for some reason, where a player would get to the end of a contract where they know they're going to become a free agent. So a free agent is like they can hit the open market and a lot of teams can buy for their services. And you see it like these big contracts being handed out. In a lot of cases, that last year or so before they go into free agency, they just kill it. They hit for high percentage, lots of home runs or whatever it is. Why? Because they want that big contract. So maybe they had a couple of years that they fell off and all of a sudden it's like, But the question is, is that a true indication of that player's ability in that 1 year or the previous five that weren't as great a better indication. That's a tough thing to do. And I'm glad I'm not a general manager of a baseball team or a professional sports team to say, wow, I'm going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases on this player. I hope they're the person they are now, not what they were maybe a couple of years ago. The same thing can happen with practices as well. Sellers in the last year or two can all of a sudden go, I'm going to ramp up marketing. I'm going to ramp up all these things. I'm going to lower expenses. Well, wait a minute. Are those normalized elements, or is it a free agency? Is it the last couple of years where they go, I know I'm selling. I know I'm retiring. I know I'm going to transition out of this practice. So all of a sudden they inflate the numbers. They're not inflating them illegally. They're doing it by boosting up the value of that practice in that last couple of years, because now they're doing things that they should have done for the previous 4 or 5 or 10 years before that. So there needs to be a discount. Now, I'm not an accountant to be able to say, what is that discount? But you have to look at not just the previous year. You need to look at like a couple of years before. So it's always important that you get obviously tax returns and profit and loss statements. The bank is going to evaluate this as well. So your bank, if they're a dental specific lender, which I absolutely like recommend that you have, they're not going to be able to say this is a bad buy. But when they do an acquisition cash flow analysis to evaluate the loan itself, they are going to look at what is the cash flow. And if they say no, maybe the wrong bank, but maybe it's the wrong practice. Because when they're evaluating an acquisition, they're looking at you as the buyer, but also the practice itself. They're going to meld all this together in this big cash flow analysis to determine, does this transaction make sense with this buyer and this particular subject practice? So if a doctor, and this is where it's valuable, that this is where having people on your team and somebody on the seller's team to gather this information is, because you need to look at the transaction, you need to look at the profit and loss, you need to look at the expenses of overall. If the doctor's unwilling to provide the detailed financials of the practice, that's a huge red flag that you probably need to run away from. And when that happens, it's usually when a doctor's trying to sell the practice themselves, unfortunately, and they don't want to give you the information because they feel like, well, you know, you don't need this. You're buying the practice and the bank is just looking at you. No. Part of the transaction in the evaluation of the bank and the loan is based upon you and based upon the practice. Profit and loss statements. The bank will require typically 2 or 3 years previous tax returns, as well as a most recent profit and loss statement. Need to look at all these different elements. I would pull patient records. I would get a production by provider report if there's multiple providers in the practice, if there's an associate or two in the practice, to really understand the financials. You're not going to walk out of there and go, I'm a financial analyst for practices, but you're going to have a better understanding, especially if somebody's on your team to give you that information so that you can make the best decision from a financial perspective. One of the big things I see is demographics. Now, I'm talking about internal demographics and external demographics. Internal demographics are looking at new patient numbers, looking at the active patient records. Is this a fee for service? Is it insurance mix? Those are the internal demographics of the practice. It's important to really understand if there's declining new patient flow, if there's an aging patient base, or reliance upon maybe like a single large like insurance plan for something along those lines. So you want to look out for all those things. So this is the common thing that I see a lot as well, which is I see a lot of instances where this happens. I have 3,000 patients. Are they active? An active patient is a patient that's been seen in the last 18 to 24 months. So pull some charts, really understand active patients, and really understand who is the patient base of this practice. Does it align for you? One of our husband and wife teams that's actually opening their first startup is they're current practice owners. And one of the big reasons that they're doing a startup is the practice that they purchased, it isn't 100% in alignment with the clinical focuses that they want to do. So in other words, that practice doesn't have the practice demographics and the dental spending habits in that area for that practice. So they're actually doing a startup. Now, they don't dislike their first practice, but it doesn't align long term. So this is an important part, is don't just look at it and say, it looks financially great. Really understand who is there, what are the needs, Is there opportunity to bring in more procedures? Is a declining element. So those are the internal demographics of the practice. Now you need to look at outside. So this is where I always say acquisitions and startups are very, very similar, except for a few very specific elements that are specific to a startup and specific to an acquisition. One of these that crosses over is the demographics of the area. So we're venturing. I just had a vision call the other night with one of our clients is looking to buy a practice. Doesn't have a subject practice in mind yet. But one of the first things we always do is what we're doing startup or an acquisition is cool. Let's talk about the demographics because we want to be able to identify an area or areas that are in alignment that have the abundance of the kinds of patients that you love. So don't just purchase a practice and go, yeah, I can make this work. I don't want to be here. Maybe I can make this work for a while. That's a big sacrifice, folks. There's a lot of things you may have to compromise on your acquisition, which is, I'll talk about that in a future podcast about acquisitions and startups. But I'd say this, like buying a practice where you don't love any of the patients or they're not in alignment or there's not going to be future growth, not a new patient, there's too much competition, new patient growth is low, that could really set you up with a practice that is going to be very status quo. And if you have some attrition, now you've got a declining practice that you need to really boost up, which you should anyhow in terms of from a marketing perspective. But don't just throw caution to the wind and say, oh, who cares about the demographics? If you do, you're going to find yourself in an area with a practice that you don't love. And that's going to be really hard to fix because in 20 years, I've never taken a practice and put it on a flatbed truck and moved it to the next town over. It can't happen. So demographics, internally, externally. Facility and equipment elements. There could be a lot of old elements there. So this is kind of dovetails into the financing element, which is have the equipment evaluated. A lot of times that can be a part of like the overall information that's provided from you from the broker that if they're listing the practice. If there's outdated elements in the practice, whether it's you need them to produce dentistry, whether it's digital radiography, analog systems, digital systems, a poor layout. Like I know John on our team that does our floor plans. It's a science. Like a bad layout actually hinders production. And so I'm not saying to walk from a practice simply because there's old equipment, but you need to factor that in. You know, like it's kind of like when you buy a home, like my home, I bought it 7 years ago. There's been a lot of updates, but it would stink if like for 7 years, we couldn't do anything to to this home because there wasn't available, you know, equity in a home or cash flow and things like that. In a practice, it's like, okay, am I going to borrow more in order to do the things to this practice? Well, the bank may not allow you to do that because it may not work in terms of the cash flow, which then means after you close, you could be borrowing more funds that actually exceed the value of that practice and you're just adding more debt to the equation. So I would look at and evaluate what can you live with internally, whether that's the facility, but also the equipment and all the different internal elements of the practice. And a lot of people overlook this. It's not the biggest thing in the world that you need to say when evaluating your practice, but certainly a factor that you want to consider. One of the big pitfalls I see quite a bit is no transition strategy with the seller. It needs to be defined. The patient's trust should be transferred to you as the buyer. This is where attrition happens when there's a poor strategy or no strategy. You need to have something that's clear that is in writing that says, how will the seller introduce you to the team? I'll talk about that more in a little bit, but more importantly to the patients. What is the messaging? And there needs to be a message from the seller, but there also needs to be your messaging as well. And you need to have a strategy of transitioning patients to you. And it starts with the seller to ensure that's there. There's also situations of how long is the seller going to stay on board? It could be too long or too short. Too short. Oh, I don't have enough time. Transition poorly. Too long. May not be a good fit. The other thing is I don't want a seller to overstay their welcome in some scenarios, unless it's like they're a high producer that actually this was maybe a senior doctor and associate ran practice, but you know, don't buy a single doctor practice thinking and the seller expects like
hey, I want to stay on for 2 or 3 days and get paid as a high level associate. That won't work. How do you pay them when the patient base is the same the day that you bought it? So there needs to be a true transition strategy. I like to, you know, within a few months, if possible, depending on the size and scope of the practice, maybe it's a month, maybe it's 60 days, maybe it's a couple months to have that new, if it's a single doctor practice, again, kind of caveat here, single doctor practice, how long do they really need to be there? You need to get the lay of the land, but what you don't want to create is confusion with the patients and confusion with the team that goes, okay, new doctor's here, but old doctor's here. Well, I'm going to go to old doctor for the answers. I want to see the old doctor because I'm a patient. No, that's not going to do well. So you need to make sure like they know that you're the new leader and there's a transition strategy from the patient. But more importantly, also just as important is the team as well. So a transition plan needs to be included in the purchase agreement. There also needs to be a non-compete and all these different elements. I'll talk about that in a moment from a legal perspective. There needs to be a letter of introduction, seller saying, hey, here's the new buyer, super excited. This is going to be great. You should come in and meet the new buyer, the new owner, super excited. There needs to be a positivity around this. That way it doesn't feel like it just kind of like, you know, this kind of like drops in your lap. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm having it handed to practice and old guy didn't do anything for me. Now you're climbing uphill. Team. There could be a poor transition team if there's not good messaging. They can make or break the success of a transition. You may lose some team members. You may have some toxic people that you need to get out of the practice. So I think it's important to evaluate the current team before you buy the practice, understand how they're being paid, what are the financial elements that are there, understand their roles. But I think that there needs to be discreet when meeting the team, and just like you just don't want to disrupt a lot of things within the practice. I think one of the common pitfalls is, I would say, ignoring like toxic elements or loyalty to the seller. That folks, people will undermine you, not because you're a bad person. It's simply because like they have a loyalty to the old owner. So I think it's important, but also understand like who may be there from day one might not be there day 90. But what I wouldn't do is buy a practice and the next day go, all right, we're going to do everything differently. There needs to be some status quo. I am very big on intentionally bringing in your systems, your protocols, the patient experience that you expect of your team, but don't do it from day one because you're going to disrupt all the things. They're scared. They're afraid. Most people don't like change. You're the change. So have very few changes in the beginning, but be intentional over, I always say, like 6 to 12 months of introducing systems and elements with your team that make sense. But also don't be afraid. What's the old saying? Fire fast, hire slow. There might be somebody in there that's just super toxic, that's trying to undermine you as the new owner. Make sure that that's there. Understand the employment agreements that are there. Understand who they are, and ensure that you have a smooth team and staffing transition. But don't ignore that and make sure that you're very intentional about that. Make sure you have legal due diligence. A lot of times there's not a lot of legal due diligence. Are there elements behind the scenes you're not aware of? Have a non-compete with the seller. If the seller's balking, and I've seen this before, if the seller is balking at a non-compete, there's something fishy there. I've had it a couple of times in a previous life in the banking world. And one of them was a seller that wanted to fight the radius, which was pretty standard. A lot of times it's like, you know, 5 years or 10 miles. The thing is, most sellers, if they're retiring, like you could put 5 years and 20 miles and most of them probably won't balk at it, but you know, it's got to be within reason. But he was balking at like 3 years or 10 miles or something along those lines. I was like, wow, why? Couldn't get an answer. Finally, it was his son owned a practice like 7 or 8 miles away from the practice he was selling. Now the buyer had at this point I was in banking, so I wasn't, you know, really consulting, but it was like, okay, the bank said, if they're okay, we can live with that. The buyer was okay with it, but there was a lot more stipulations that were there because then it was, there couldn't be actively marketing for patients and things like that. So there was a lot more, red tape, and a lot more restrictions on that. But make sure that you have an ironclad non-compete. So you just don't want this person to like sell a great practice that's profitable to say, heck, you know what? I did this once. I can do this again. I'm going to do it down the road and get another payday off of you or somebody else's associate back. So have a dental specific attorney. Review everything. Make sure there's no liens or anything that's out there, any legal judgments against the practice. And also that they are there to prepare the documents, the PSA, the purchase and sales agreement, the lease. If there's a lease that needs to be transferred, which is very, very important in employment contracts, the lease surprisingly could be a make or break deal for some transactions. If that lease can't get transferred to you, or it's a sticking point because the seller and sometimes has a really bad lease that doesn't get them off the lease and they're balking at that, that deal could go south in a hurry. So you need to make sure you have an attorney that's not just looking at the practice from a legal perspective, that prepares all the proper documentation, that can explain it to you and that you understand what you're actually purchasing. There's nothing worse than signing something, taking something over and going, I didn't realize what that meant. A dental specific attorney will be there to guide you through that. What you pay today, excuse me, what you invest today into a dental specific attorney could save you tens, hundreds, maybe millions of dollars later. So don't go on the cheap like, hey, my cousin's attorney, I think he could do it. He said he'll do it for a couple thousand dollars. If they haven't done hundreds of transactions, hundreds of acquisitions, do not work with that attorney. They need to have this base of knowledge. They need this experience to protect you from the biggest financial decision that you'll probably make in your entire career or life. Get that right. Not having a plan for ownership transition is a big thing. Kind of back to my analogy of the Matrix. Don't take the, I'm buying a practice. I have cash flow. I'll figure it out. Once I close, I'll figure out all these things. That is chaos. You need to have a plan. This is one of the biggest pitfalls. There's no plan for integrating your systems. There's no plan for marketing or rebranding the practice. This doesn't start after you buy the practice. This is preparing. When we're working with our clients or buying practices, we're intentional about here's what we're going to do from a marketing perspective after. This is what we need to do from an insurance credentialing after you buy the practice. This is what we need to do to prepare the team and the management or any kind of scheduling changes or any updates and things like that. That doesn't happen after you buy the practice. That has a whole plan to it before you even make that transaction and that ink goes to paper or pen goes to paper. I guess it is. So I always say like there's probably, I like to break it up in like multiple parts. There is, you know, you have a transition plan that's assessing operations, HR, patient communication, marketing, rebranding, because you're not just going to walk in and not market the practice. So there needs to be very specific elements that you're going to look at in that transition time. And the transition could be months. I don't want it to be years because to me, I hear that story so many times where doctors are like, I bought a practice and it took me 5 years to get the way that I wanted it. That's not a good transition. That's the, I'll figure it out over time. That means like you bought a home with wood paneling on the walls, you know, brown paint, bad carpet. And they said, oh, we'll just live with it, even though it's not what you want. So make sure there's a plan for systems and protocols. And it's not just winging it because the Matrix is not going to give you the code to practice ownership over the weekend. It needs to have a plan. One of the big things I always say is, there's an emotional component when buying a practice. There's two people. Well, you as the buyer, you as the seller. In DSO transactions, and I'm not involved, but like in DSOs, I mean, there's no emotion. It's a financial transaction. There's private equity firms and, you know, all these different elements that are going into it. Everything's just a financial transaction. So you're going to be emotional as a buyer. You're emotional because it's a big, big, big decision. You're becoming a business owner. You're becoming a practice owner. So don't let emotion cloud judgment. I'm giving a lot of movie things here today. The other movie I think that was on last night, I think I watched briefly. So I have a few movies. Maybe I need to add to that list. You know, Goodfellas, Shawshank, The Matrix, Ocean's 11. like, I love those movies, especially Ocean's 11. There's the beginning scene when George Clooney gets out of prison and he goes hook up with his buddy Brad Pitt. His name's Rusty in the movie. And at this time, like, Brad Pitt is teaching, like, the celebrities. There's, like, celebrities how to play poker. And George Clooney comes in, kind of sneaks in, and he didn't know he was out and all this stuff. And they were talking about, and George Clooney is making this big bet. And in this poker game with all these celebrities, and, you know, they got money, and they're like, hey, whatever, you know, it's no big deal. And Brad Pitt, who's like the teacher, I guess you will, the professor of poker in this particular scenario, says, hey, what's the first rule of poker? And one person says, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, that's not it. And one guy goes, leave emotion at the door. And he goes, exactly. Leave emotion at the door. I know that's tough, but emotion will cloud judgment. Falling in love with a practice, ignoring red flags, because maybe you feel like you're desperate. Like, I've been looking for a practice for years. I just have to do this one. Don't just do the one. Don't just make the transaction because it just feels right. It needs to be like all things need to be right. I's need to be dotted. T's need to be crossed. Don't overlook things like declining production because you like the practice or the seller. I'm sure there's some upside to a lot of practices, but I never recommend buying on potential. Don't buy on potential. I think it's great if there's an upside to some potential, but don't go, hey man, this thing's been declining. There's all these different things, but I'm super dentist. I'm the one that could turn this practice around. No, you're just going to be like swimming upstream in a lot of cases. Buying an underperforming practice is one of the worst things you could do. Because there's while there's probably one story of doctors like, I bought that practice that was a diamond in the rough that wasn't doing very much. Now I got a $1 million practice after 3 years. That is the anomaly. That is not commonplace. Most practices that are underperforming are always going to underperform. And the challenge with an underperforming practice is this. This is common. This is like common pitfall, like 11 at this point. But don't buy an underperforming practice because the cash flow doesn't throw off enough cash flow. Actually, a dentist, I even commented on this earlier today. It was buying a practice that was producing, I think he said, or collecting $200,000 a year. And he's like, yeah, I got to continue to work as an associate in order to make this thing work. But there's one team member that's there and he or she is really, really great. What is great about a practice that's a four-op practice that's collecting $200,000? Why do you want to buy that? You can start up next door and those patients can come to you. Now, the advantage is like it's a facility, but that's a startup, folks. Treat it like a startup. The challenge is when you go to a dental specific lender and a lender that understands the space and you say, hey, I want to buy this practice. It's a $300,000 practice. The challenge from a financing perspective is they're not going to lend you $700,000 to do all the things you want to do, to market it, to grow it and do all these things because they're backing into the cash flow. It's like equity. Again, kind of back to the analogy of a home. A bank doesn't lend over the value of a home. Banks aren't going to lend over the value of a dental practice. So you're not going to have the cash flow to do all the things that you need to do. So that's why it's important to not be emotionally charged with a practice for a couple reasons. Don't buy the underperforming practice because you're desperate to make the decision, but don't let emotion drive it. The other side of this is there's going to be emotion on the other side. The seller, in a lot of cases, if it's a doctor-to-doctor transaction, for most of you, it will be. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to get emotional as well. If they don't, I would never want to work with a dentist who's trying to sell a practice on their own because they have nobody that's in their ear that's taking the emotion out on their side to say, this is a transaction. We understand you put your blood, sweat, and tears into this, but this is the reality of what your practice is worth and valued and what it should sell for. Because they're going to factor in like all kinds of things into the emotion of the transaction. Oh, I did this thing. I did this. It's actually worth more. Well, why? It's only worth what people are going to buy it for. And I'm not saying you should go in and jam a doctor, jam a seller for lowering the price just for the sake of lowering the price. But there's a financial transaction that's here that has to make sense for two parties. And if a seller is going out on their own to sell a practice, that is going to be really, really hard. And 99% of the time, and I would avoid sellers without a broker or somebody that's representing them illegally or something because they have nobody that's actually keeping their emotions here in check that's trying to take the emotions out. They need to take the emotions out. Take the emotion out, leave it at the door. They need to do the same thing. So what you need to do when it comes to a transition, I like the approaches from like a startup, is you need to make sure you have the team, accountant, attorney, consultant, people that have done this hundreds of times. Don't just stop at the practice. This is where a lot of people get misguided. I've talked about the 3P methodology many times: practice, profits, and purpose. The practice in a startup or an acquisition is the transaction, getting open, taking over ownership. Profits, the next tier, imagine this like kind of three steps. The profits is about systems. You need to be intentional about having systems in a transition strategy for your acquisition. Then the last part is you need to be able to build your DNA to have a bigger purpose. This is how you connect within your community. Who are you going to be as the new owner? It's important that you focus on long range, reverse engineering. What is the purpose? So that then you, as the new owner, are connecting within the community to attract patients and maybe even future team members into your practice. Cool. If you want to learn more, I would say this. Go to idealpractices.com and schedule a clarity call with one of our team members. This is not a sales call. This is, let's hear about your vision. I want to hear more. So many doctors come to us and talk about, like, I'm not quite sure the path I want to go, whether it's acquiring a practice or starting a practice. Let's talk about those pros and cons. Let's talk about what those different elements are. And let's see if we can develop a plan for you. All right, folks. That is a wrap on the common pitfalls of an acquisition. Don't forget to check any show notes for any and all links and resources that we talked about today. I've kind of dabbled it out there. Next time, we are going to dive into the advantages and disadvantages of a startup and an acquisition. And I want you to be able to formulate, like, what is the right path? Here's the thing, though. There isn't one better path. There's a better path for you. And we're going to talk about those so that you can make the best decision
for your future.
I'll see you there.
As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to picture yourself a year from now. Are you still in your associateship? Or are you rocking it at your own dental practice, creating beautiful smiles and making a real difference? If that's the dream, it's time to chase it. Before we split, make sure to hit subscribe, drop a review, and give us your rating. It helps us keep bringing you the good stuff that you're into. Until we meet again, keep taking that next step towards your future practice. Here's to investing in your dreams and making them a reality.